As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
A few months ago, Kobbie Mainoo had not played a minute for his club at senior level, let alone his country. Now at 18, he is one of Manchester United's best players. And after a man of the match performance for England last night, Gareth Southgate was full of praise.
Everything that we've seen with his club, he reproduced in an England shirt, which isn't always the case. Very calm, receives so well under pressure, strong.
So how has one so young been able to establish himself at the highest level so quickly? And in terms of Euro 2024, has it gone beyond Mainoo just being in the squad for England? Does he need to start? I'm Ayo Akinwolere. Welcome to the Athletic FC podcast. Okay, so joining us today to talk Mainoo, we have Manchester United writer Carl Anker, who's also part of the Talk of the Devils podcast, our data writer and part of the Athletic Football Tactics podcast, Mark Carey, and also the Athletic's Michael Bailey, who was at Wembley for us last night. Mark, let's start with you. I guess from an analytic perspective, all eyes were fixed on Mainoo last night. Where did he fit into this squad tactically, in your opinion?
Well, I think, Gareth Southgate said as much. He offers something to England that a lot of the England midfielders don't, and that's his ability to be so confident and incisive on the ball. I think that a lot of the England midfielders, if you were to list a Conor Gallagher, Jordan Henderson, Declan Rice to a certain extent, and we know how good Declan Rice is in other facets of his game, but all of those players are quite safe on the ball. They'll play the simple pass, the pass that we all expect, and our eyes kind of automatically go to where we think that recipient is. Kobbie Mainoo doesn't play those passes. He plays the passes that we don't expect. He'll take the ball in areas that others maybe won't. So from a tactical perspective, that was what stood out to me yesterday. He was taking the ball inside Belgium's block. He's a little bit further forward than I think we all expected him to maybe be. I think we thought that he was going to sit alongside Declan Rice and be a bit of a double pivot and collect the ball off the defence, the centre backs. But he was a little bit further forward. He was willing to go inside Belgium's block and take it in those tighter areas and leave Declan Rice to collect it off the centre backs and collect the ball outside of the block. And as much as anything, even if he didn't receive the ball, it shows, he was saying, I am comfortable in this space. I'm comfortable to collect the ball here. Give me the ball and I will do something with it. And then we can talk about that, shortly, exactly what he did do with it. But it was those incisive passes. It was wriggling out of challenges. And we saw it for the first goal in the build-up to it for England's equaliser. I can see Carl nodding along here because it probably is so familiar for a lot of what he's done for Manchester United so far this season. So
Mark and I were in the office yesterday and we basically did a first draft of this podcast as I showed him through a bunch of video clips, and I showed him an incident in the game against Liverpool where he slippery, very, very slippery, avoided a pincer move between Endo and Harvey Elliott. And I think when you get a player in defensive midfield, defensive midfield feels an inaccurate description of what Mainoo does, of what Declan Rice does as well. But the truly remarkable thing about Mainoo is how good he is in really, really tight areas where most players would panic, would lose the ball. He's able to retain the ball. He's able to, you know, what's the phrase? You know, you can smuggle the ball through a tight corridor. You can play in a telephone box. And that's the thing. There's got probably a lot of people going, why is there Mainoo hype? It's just because he plays for Manchester United, or it's just because he plays for England. And I think it's that rare combination of both, right? So Manchester United have needed a player who can set the tempo in central midfield since Michael Carrick hung up his boots, more or less. I watched England lose to Italy in the Euro final. And I'd say from minute 50, it became very apparent that England needed to do something about Verratti and Jorginho. And Southgate didn't, for whatever reason. And you look at Mainoo and you go, not only have you emerged out of essentially nowhere, and at 18, you look to be able to solve the Michael Carrick problem for Manchester United, but also you look to be able to have the potential to solve a very English problem, which is, can we get our own Verratti-type figure? And it's that combination of two long-standing problems being dealt with at the same time in one player who's only 18. Ridiculous.
Mike, you were at the match. What was it like watching him in the flesh? How did the fans respond to him on the pitch?
Yeah, I think we'll be realistic because it was Wembley, it was a friendly, and, you know, it was kind of a playful atmosphere. You know, from the first 80 seconds, you kind of sensed you were going to get a fun game. And, you know, there was a relaxed nature to it, which may well have helped Mainoo, you know, show what he was capable of, definitely. What struck me, I think, was his maturity on the pitch. You know, you wouldn't even have thought it was the classic case of old enough, good enough, because you wouldn't even have contemplated it was his first start or his lack of senior football, never mind international football. So the way he was carrying himself, interacting with his teammates, I thought he exuded confidence and maturity, and the crowd, they enjoyed watching him play. You could tell that they were excited by what he could do as part of that team. And I thought the balance in the midfield, you could watch that first hour of that game, given the quality of the opposition they were up against, but also the dynamic of the game. But you watched that hour, and to me, there was a perfectly balanced midfield four with Mainoo, Bellingham, Rice, and Foden in terms of how they were rotating, who was covering the space. So Mainoo did have the option, and the way Belgium played allowed him to kind of be drawn forward a little bit, but often he would be coming up against two players and he'd have to find his way through there, which he did most of the time. A couple of the times he didn't, but there was always a degree of protection from Bellingham or Rice behind him, and I thought they worked that really well. So that for me was the most encouraging, because the more they play together, the better they are going to get, without doubt.
Yeah, Gareth Southgate talked about his maturity at the end of the match. Carl, I was just wondering, from your perspective, and I think we need to offer balance here, because, you know, we've talked about the positives. What does he have to work on, though?
So I wrote a piece about Mainoo after the victory over Liverpool, and I said the only thing English football likes more than seeing a young player emerge is spending ages talking about what they might do in the future. So let's do it. The big one, I think the big question is, how big physically is Mainoo going to be? So not too long ago, he was listed as being 5'7". I've seen reports of him being listed as 5'9". And again, yesterday, Mark and I looked at a photograph of Mainoo receiving his cap with Gareth Southgate, and they look like they're looking eye to eye. And Gareth Southgate's 6 foot. He's a very nice man, and he's, you know, 6 foot, and still, you know, you can tell he used to be a centre back. So Mainoo, to my eyes already, you know, I watch him pretty much week in, week out, he looks like he's had a little bit of a growth spurt this season. He definitely looks like he's been in the gym. If 24-year-old Mainoo is 6 foot and, you know, broad-chested and has the big legs that we think he can, you know, if he does his squats, he eats his Greggs, you know, he's Ghanaian. If he has his plantain, his fufu, if he has that man's body, there is a potential for him to be a number six, number four, depending on how you want to call it, that sort of defensive midfielder. I think one thing he will probably have to add to his armory to get to that is he needs a one-touch press-resistant pass around the corner that Sergio Busquets was the master of. But he's got the presence of mind, as Michael said. He's got that calmness in possession. He's played as the deepest midfielder a couple of times for United this season already. He's very good when he puts his foot on the ball. But because he's only 18 and because he's not the biggest gentleman. There have been two or three instances where he's playing in these deep areas, and I've seen more streetwise midfielders just push him off. In particular against Fulham, there were two or three times where he's collecting the ball, particularly off throw-ins. He's not necessarily the best in the air as well. So these are two or three things where if he thickens out and gets the physical profile that he looks like he can get, he has the potential to be a number six. Now, there's an extra complication here as to, do Manchester United want him to be a number six? And so the reason why I am so excited about Maynou, and I think the reason why English football is, you know, eyebrows are flying off our heads about Maynou, is English football doesn't make midfielders like Maynou too often. Historically, England makes very, very good centre-backs. You know, Harry Maguire is the quintessential English centre-back. He heads the ball, he makes his tackles, he plays through all sorts of injuries and he does that. And then we've got a new generation of English football players that are a bit more like Rashford, a little bit more like Phil Foden, which are, they're all tricky and they dribbly and they all work in the half space. So historically, England make players who are good in both penalty areas. But the gentlemen who can get the ball between them, not so much. You tend to make players like Conor Gallagher, or you make players like Mason Mount, who can push up from the centre circle and arrive in the final third, but someone who can sit there at the centre circle, give me the ball, and I'll just direct traffic. England doesn't do that too often, because normally when a player does emerge, you can do that. We go, oh, let's just push you closer to goal so you can get more assists. So if Maynou doesn't want to be that number six and wants to have that very English, we're going to push you closer to goal, he might end up in this box-to-box role that... I mean, you've already seen it two or three times for United this season, where Casemiro is the deepest player and Maynou's got this box-to-box role. For him to do that, he will have to have a big chat with Paul Scholes about how to be a threat from outside the box. Maynou hasn't got Paul Scholes' long passing yet. He hasn't got Paul Scholes' shot from outside the area. You know, you think about his brilliant goals against Bradford, or, you know, that sort of volley he has. He hasn't got that yet. You know, he's not the goal threat from outside the box. So these are things he'll have to add to his game if he wants to be the box-to-box midfielder. But again, a lot of this is up to how big he wants to get. A lot of this is up to what the club wants to do. I think if you're Erik ten Hag, if you're Ineos right now and you're looking at Maynou, it might make more sense to either keep Casemiro for another season or to go into the transfer market and get yourself another defensive midfielder who can win the majority of the tackles and let Maynou direct play a little bit further advanced. You know, I think if you're a Manchester United fan, I'm very sorry for what I'm about to do. I'm about to compare a Manchester United player to a Liverpool player. But if you envisage Maynou to have a job similar to Thiago Alcantara, Manchester United now need to go off and get their own Fabinho-type figure. Again, I'm not saying Maynou's as good as these players, but these are the sort of routes he can do.
And Mark, if we look at yesterday's match against Belgium in the friendly, where were the gaps in his play? And it was a great performance, it got man of the match performance, but, you know, it wasn't a perfect performance like anyone else on the field.
Yeah, I wrote a piece that's out at the moment on all of the good things that Maynou did. And I just picked out a couple of things that I thought maybe out of possession he could be a little bit stronger on. But the more I looked at it in terms of Southgate's comments after the game, the more I think that was by design rather than necessarily ill discipline on Maynou's part. So I think that they were looking to press high, lock on man for man and try and win the ball back really high. So Maynou was essentially sort of man marking, getting really tight to Amadou Onana in Belgium's midfield. And there were occasions where they were just bypassed, initially from a goal kick where the goalkeeper just played over all of them and Youri Tielemans was able to just collect it and just face up on goal. And there was a second time where essentially Maynou, because of his role and what he was being asked to do, was just venturing further and further forward. And Belgium just simply had a counterattack, a break, which was their downfall on quite a few occasions against Brazil. And he was essentially just running back, chasing back and behind the ball, which... again, considering the expectation ahead of the game was that he was going to be screening the defence and being that sort of combative midfielder, it was a little bit of a surprise. But as I say, I think that was a tactically intentional thing, and that's not to say that he's not capable of doing it. But I think kind of going to Carl's point as well, I find this so funny that he's 18 years old and these are the sorts of things which you should normally be working on in an academy setting, never mind a first team setting, never mind a national team setting. So a bit like the Endrick episode that you guys did yesterday, it's just funny that we're talking about all these things and somewhat nitpicking when this is someone who is going to be making mistakes probably for the next 3 to 4 years, because that's natural. And there's players who are still incredible who are breaking through into the first team of these elite sides at 21, 22. So any mistakes he does make, any shortcomings that he does have,
he's 18 years old. And I know that's been so like spoken about in terms of his age, but that contextual factor is so key when we are kind of assessing his game, because it's not fully formed and neither should it be.
I like the fact you mentioned the pace of the counter-attack. So one thing that has... There's perhaps more of a problem for Manchester United this season. I mean, Manchester United are this transition-based thing. Ten Hag means is it leaves midfield incredibly porous. And Maynard's not—he's not the quickest. He's not rapid. He's not hasn't got blistering pace. So when he is retreating, it can be difficult. But once he catches you, he does have the presence of mind in the tackling to make a good tackle. But it's that thing of he has to get there first, and that will be, you know, you can stop that by changing your midfield construction, by not being so touch tight and not being as man-to-man focused as England have been, as Manchester United have been. You know, we're talking about Maynard trying to man mark Onana. Onana is 6 foot something, and he has the physical profile and body that Maynard might one day have. Or, you know, if you're Manchester United, I'm sure there's plenty of Manchester United fans listening to this going, just get Onana and put him next to Maynard. Like, that is, as a duo, can be quite promising as well. This is the fun thing of, we're watching the very, very, very beginnings of a player that can go in multiple directions. I think ultimately it's going to be him who shows us what sort of player he is rather than the other way around.
Yeah, I mean, Ivan Toney at the end was talking about his age, you know, he says, I think at 18 he was probably playing Xbox at that point, you know. Michael, I'm just looking at all the other matches that were being played yesterday. You look at players like Yamin Lamal, Zaire Emery, Endrick for Brazil as well. I mean, these are a bunch of young players who are still teenagers. Is it easy to forget just how young he is?
Yeah, I think, again, the context of the games are very different to when we see them in a major tournament. And I think most England fans are scarred by highly talented 18-year-olds or whatever doing something stupid at a really important point. So, and I'm not for one point saying that Maynard will do that. But you're right. I think that's so, it's so exciting, as Mark rightly says, that what Kobbie Maynard can do, we don't know yet, because there's so much he can develop and improve on, and have so many of these great young players have such a phenomenal starting point. I mean, it's incredible the level of coaching and development that's already gone into them to be ready to this level, to almost not look short because they are physically and immature, relatively speaking. So it's phenomenal the development that goes into these players to get them to this point. But there is a bit between the years that you can only ever judge once they're stuck on a pitch in a really high intense moment. But I think you can tell even in a setting like Wembley in midweek whether they have the right foundations to be trusted by their head coach or whoever to go and see if they can deliver it. Maynard looked completely comfortable and at one with his teammates. And the teammates, as Ivan Toney's effectively said, they've seen him and gone, yeah, we're having him. This is great. He can definitely offer us something. The coaching staff are saying that. And that momentum can build into something that does sustain and actually provides really accelerated progression. And suddenly the young player is rising to whatever level they're being thrown at and into. And that can just as easily happen. It's just probably that caveat of we're just going to wait and see. But it's a really exciting prospect for him and for all of these young players come the Euros. It's going to be just a brilliant subplot to the tournament.
I rewatched the highlights this morning and I saw, you know, going through newspaper headlines, looking at Maynard and you know, I'm looking at Belgium's team as well. And I went, we used to describe last season, a lot of these words were being used to describe Romeo Lavia, who was 19 years of age, playing as a single pivot in a Southampton team that was going one way, but also, you know, loads of chat about how, you know, this Manchester City developed, you know, academy player who had the presence of mind to play defensive midfield, and he was being linked to Liverpool, he was being linked to Arsenal, he eventually went to Chelsea. And unfortunately, you know, it's an ankle injury means we haven't seen him this season. And I think this is the fun thing about football in the 2020s is that, I mean, for one, I've never seen so many 18-year-olds be 6 foot in my life. I don't know what they're feeding them, but they're all huge now. It's tremendous. And two, they are now able to, these are teenagers with the presence of mind of players who used to be 22, 23, positioning and their tactical knowledge and their ability to know, oh, okay, if this player's run here, I've got to run here and curve my run and do these sorts of things, which, you weren't supposed to know that until your mid-20s, you know, you were meant to have four or five seasons, but we're seeing, I mean, Maynard's not had 30 senior appearances for club or country yet, and yet he's got a presence of mind of a 24-year-old, or it looks as if he has the presence of mind of a 24-year-old. You know, caveat, asterisk, look at Manchester United in the league table.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Maynard, so confident on the ball. Ivan Toney might have a chance, even might have a penalty, they do. What a moment for Ivan Toney then. The king of the spot kicks, scores for England. Maddison, it's Bellingham! And England have rescued it!
I was at Wembley last night for England 2, Belgium 2. I was really impressed with Maynard, like everyone. I was interested in the role that he played. I was wondering if he might play as the number 6 to release Declan Rice, but in fact, he played a bit further forward than Rice in that number 8 role. And I thought he was fantastic. His ability to receive the ball under pressure, turn with it, turn past opponents quickly, drive forward, it gave England an extra level of dynamism that they don't always have in the middle of the pitch. And certainly, he made a really strong claim, I think, to be the third midfielder, because we know that Declan Rice and Jude Bellingham are going to start in the Euros, but we don't know who that third player is going to be. It was Gallagher who played there against Brazil, obviously. Henderson wasn't fit for these games. Calvin Phillips wasn't part of this squad, but it's not like England have a lot of options to play in that role. Southgate was full of praise for him afterwards, talking about his ability to, again, to receive the ball, as particularly under pressure, as being the thing that most impressed him about his performance. I think it looks pretty good for him to go to the Euros, I reckon, at this point, simply because England don't have many good options in that position. And I wouldn't even be surprised if he gets to start a game out there or two.
The Athletic's Jack Pitbrook there on Kobbie Mainoo, another who thinks he might even start due to the lack of options. Right, Michael, you were very adamant that, you know, this is Wembley, this is a friendly, I get it, but the big one is, this was the tryout for the Euros. Is he part of that midfield, Michael?
Oh yeah. No, for me. And I'm just trying to be kind to him. I want to express what it was like in the stadium. It was fun. You know, that's an important consideration. But as an audition, as a player who is 18 and it's like, right, go show us whether you know, I can trust you and you can do this. 100%. Going into these games, I was thinking, you know, Jordan Henderson, okay, but we are a midfielder short here. Who on earth is going to get that job? I don't feel that now. I think you take Kobbie Mainoo and you're done. You've got your combination. You've got James Maddison coming in off the bench. You've got Conor Gallagher available. You've got the options you need. So that isn't really even about his age. To me, he's passed the audition. You are now a part of this group. We trust you. We know you're young. We know where your game needs to develop, says the England coaches. But you're there now. Let's build around this and be prepared for the summer. So to me, debate is over. Not quite the same in some of the other positions, I might add. But that's probably also for another podcast. But for Kobbie Mainoo, yes, as I tweeted, end of.
Mark, tactically, does he offer this England squad in the middle something that Phillips, Henderson don't offer this team?
Yeah, I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head. And I was going to say that in terms of, I think the other players that you mentioned do lack something in different areas. So you think about Conor Gallagher is known for his fantastic work rate out of possession. He's really good in the counter press, but lacks that, maybe that technical quality. And, you know, you've got to take the rough with the smooth with that. And to be honest, I don't think he passed the audition when playing against Brazil. There was a few loose passes that just fell short. Jordan Henderson is massively experienced. He's one of Southgate's lieutenants, but he's not likely to make those higher risk passes. And in the latter stages of a tournament, when you need someone to step up and it would be maybe higher risk, but higher reward, is Henderson going to be that person? Probably not. Calvin Phillips, much has been spoken about him, but he's just simply lacking form and fitness. Hasn't played anywhere near enough games to warrant, you know, still being able to step into the England's side. So each one of those, I think, just sort of has, you know, shortcomings to their game. And we've spoken about the well-rounded nature of Kobbie Mainoo. And yes, there's still stuff that he needs to work on. But I think that he does kind of have all of those attributes, and you can kind of grow a little bit more, you know, more between the now and the end of the season. But I think that's the thing that bodes well tactically, is that he does have a bit of everything. Whereas the others have got quite notable shortcomings. So, I agree with everything the guys have said in terms of that. I think it's maybe a different question if you're going to say, is he in the squad versus is he in the starting 11, you know, against Serbia for the first game of the Euros. But, you know, a lot can happen between now and the end of the season. Who knows what will happen in terms of maybe injuries, form, fitness, whatever. But yeah, I think he's certainly got a place on the plane.
But does he start though? That's the question. And I'm opening this up to you as well, Carl. And all of you are sort of like, yeah, I want to see him on the plane. It'd be nice to say. I mean, does he start? Make the call. I mean,
Mark's got his finger up because we were doing this. We were having this big chat yesterday because there are secretly two England teams. Stick with me. There are two England 11s Southgate has to build at the same time. So this was much clearer in the lead up to the last Euros. So last Euros, England would play 3-4-3 if they were up against a big team. And then if they were going to dominate possession, it'd be 4-3-3. And then we got to the World Cup and then Southgate went, actually, I'm just going to go all in on this 4-3-3. So I think now the formation is sorted, 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1. But there is the England team you play when you're expected to dominate possession. I think when you do that, you need to have more attack, you know, quicker attackers up front, so players who can stretch the play. This is why I think Jarrod Bowen will be really, really important at the Euros. This is why I think Rashford will still have a really great role. I think Trent in central midfield is going to be really, really important because you need someone to win the ball, you need someone to give it to Trent, you need Trent to look up, you need Trent to ping it to someone like Rashford or Kane on the counter. That's what you want to do against. I think that's the best way to score against your big teams like France. Yeah, there's a very good chance England will play France in the semi-final in Dortmund. And I think that's an option. There's also the team you need to play where if you're going to dominate possession, which hopefully should be some of your games in the group stages, then you want people who can use the ball properly and not do silly things with the ball. And I think that's where Mainoo really, really has an option. You don't necessarily have to play Mainoo in the big game against France, but Mainoo in a game against Serbia, when you're expected to have 50 to 60% possession, really, really peaks things up. I think while we're talking about Mainoo in the starting line, we also now need to talk about the fullbacks and the fullback situation because, I mean, Michael, you've seen, you were there at Wembley. Left back didn't look great, did it?
Not ideal. No, it would be handy if Luke Shaw was back and available. And that is a tricky point. And centre back, I think there are questions there going into form and fitness for sure. But yes, and the key thing about the fullbacks is, of course, how that then interacts with the midfield. Because, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold has to be in the 11, really. He is a definite starter for me because of the quality he's got. But you then spending so much time probably manufacturing the way that is going to work, that takes a lot of effort and is then obviously affects all the other positions and who you're playing. And I know we discussed actually on this podcast on Friday about how you do in international football have to kind of affect what you're going to do based against the particular team you are facing. That's why I'm kind of relaxed about whether Mainoo starts, because, you know, If the circumstances is right, of course he'll start. And if it's not, it's fine, because then you can bring him on, you know, totally relaxed.
So if you wanted to have Trent in the England lineup, for me, you have to start him as a midfielder. That means you've got to put him next to Rice, which means Maynard has to drop out. Now, depending what's going on with your fullbacks and who's fit, I would have, and I said this to Mark yesterday, if Luke Shaw cannot prove his fitness, if Ben Chilwell's not at the form that he used to be at, things might change between now and the end of the season, I'd go for Colwell at left back, and I'd ask John Stones to push up from centre backs into midfield so he can back up Rice as Trent gets even further forward. That's where you get Trent in, which, okay, you've got Trent in. That's no Maynard. Now, Trent in there, I think, is when you are expected to dominate the ball. That's the one where, you know, you're playing against a team in the group stages. They're hunkering down and putting six people in front of the penalty area. So you need Trent to ping passes. And therefore, if you want to do that, you should probably have someone who wants to run in behind and stretch the play. So that means someone like Marcus Rashford moves ahead of someone like Anthony Gordon at left wing. That might all change when you're playing in the quarterfinals against another team that is going to try and hurt you as well. So then Trent might come out. You might want to put Maynard in there because Maynard is more press resistant. Blah, 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 blah. This is fun. This is fun. This is what Mark and I do for 3 hours when we should be writing articles.
Michael, I know you've got to leave us, so really appreciate your time. And definitely appreciate you jumping in on the podcast.
My pleasure.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, Carl, let's talk about Maynard at Manchester United. And I know it was thought that he'd actually play more of this season until he had an injury at pre-season. Am I right?
Yes. So he featured in United's game against Arsenal on the US tour and seemed, you know, very much seemed in Erik ten Hag's plans. You know, quite a few United fans now are getting up clips from the League Cup final victory last season, because partway through the trophy lift, Ten Hag sort of finds Maynard and sort of grabs him by the shoulder and points and says, you know, we're going to pretend, Ten Hag said, all, you know, everything the sunlight touches will be yours one day. So it very much looked as if Maynard was going to be in the plans at the start of the season, and then an injury ruled him out for what was termed as the first part of the season, in that very cryptic way Manchester United reveal injury information. And he didn't make his first real meaningful contribution to United this season until they went to Goodison Park to play Everton. And even then, I was at Goodison Park. That was a really febrile atmosphere. That was Everton's first game since they were issued what was then a 10-point deduction. Loads of noise, loads of flares, loads of potential chaos. And Maynard was playing as the deepest midfielder, and he did his job, which, having watched many Manchester United games this season, I've not been able to say about all of the midfielders. His emergence has really helped solve a number of problems United have in midfield. I think Maynard is, at this point in time, the best player at receiving the ball from the centre-backs. He's the most comfortable playing out of pressure, which sounds remarkable when you've got a five-time Champions League winner in Casemiro there as well. There was a point in the game against Everton at Old Trafford, so a couple of weeks ago, where Casemiro lost the ball five times in 19 minutes. And during a goal kick, I saw Maynard sort of grab him by the arm and just, you know, give him the finger about the need to play at a certain pace. Which, again, ludicrous. An 18-year-old, an academy prospect, talking to Casemiro, of all football players, about the need for ball retention. But there you go. I think this is the there's a huge feeling of relief from Manchester United fans at the moment because midfield has been a huge muddle and will continue to be a huge muddle between now and however long, if only because Bruno Fernandes has to play as the number 10. But Maynard's emergence means Mason Mount's injury problems this season are less of an issue because Maynard can play in that position. It means if Casemiro is injured, which he currently is, Maynard can drop from that box-to-box role and play as the number 6 and you can put someone next to him. He gives fluidity in a engine room that has been far too rigid this season.
Mark, I'm going to come to you in just a second in terms of how he compares to other midfielders in the Premier League. But very quickly, Carl, in terms of an academy prospect, how have Manchester United managed to deal with his development? Because often you see a lot of young players are coming into the squad and then they go out on loan and they come back. But he's been primed for the first team for quite a while.
Yeah. There's a fantastic piece from Laurie Whitwell. Hi, Laurie. Just telling the story about Maynou and just the effort Manchester United have done to cultivate and to you know, he's got a fantastic team around him. He's one of those players, you know, you describe him as feet on the ground and head on the clouds. And I think one of the interesting things was he was a key part of the FA Youth Cup victory from not last season, but the season before that. Alejandro Garnacho got a lot of the plaudits because he was scoring the goals, but it was a lot of what Maynard was doing in central midfield was getting technical directors such as Darren Fletcher going, hang on, we've got one here. And I think it's really, really worth reiterating and underlining. You're not supposed to make that sort of player in England. France makes this player quite often. Yeah, I'm sure French newspapers, you know, the Italian newspapers, perhaps even the Argentinian newspapers are going, okay, well done. You've got a young player who's quite comfortable in possession and can break the press. We've got four of those. English football doesn't really make this too often. I think this is what makes Maynou so promising.
Well, Mark, Carl compared him stylistically to Thiago Alcantara. In comparison to other midfielders in the Premier League, where does he sit?
I mean, I definitely see the Thiago one. The more that I've watched of him, the more that I was just honing in on him across the whole of last night's game. And the reason that I see those comparisons, and again, Carl and I spoke about this yesterday, was he's so kind of upright in his stance in that he's always looking around rather than kind of being slightly hunched over and making sure that you're looking at the ball, looking up, then playing the pass. It's all kind of one fluid movement where the ball is just always going to stick to his foot. You know, the technical qualities that he's got means that he can trust, you know, where his body is in space. So there's that side of it with Thiago, and the other side being what I spoke about before, where again, your eyes naturally gaze towards the midfielder passing it out to the fullback. So you're already starting to look at the fullback's stance to collect the ball. And then suddenly the switch of play, and almost the camera shifts very suddenly because you're like, oh, we were expecting it to go one way and suddenly it's gone, you know, 10 yards forward. And that happened, you know, it's happened multiple times this season, but it happened again for England last night. So I definitely see the Thiago ones by eye. I did look a little bit into the numbers and run a bit of a similarity test based on his metrics. We use Smarter Scout on site as part of our suite. And there's a analysis you can do to basically just look at some similarities. And in the Premier League, what it sort of spat out was Billy Gilmore of Brighton as one, which I can sort of see as someone who profiles as a player who largely keeps it simple, is, you know, quite diminutive on the ball, but largely keeps it simple, quite hard to get the ball off, but also has that incisive pass in him. So I can definitely see that one for obviously a possession-based side. I know that United aren't as possession-based as they maybe once were, but with Maynou in the side, you can see that happening more and more. So Gilmore's one. Another that was notable was Pape Matar-Sarr at Spurs, which again, I can see. I think Sarr's probably a little bit more likely to drive forward with the ball at his feet and maybe not kind of want to get it to feet quite as much. But, you know, both players who have sort of had that ability to play in higher areas, despite primarily being tasked with more of a deeper role. So those two are probably noteworthy. The other one that I think, again, sort of by eye, and I'll be interested to get Carl's take on this, I'm going to see whether he's going to smile, is a right-footed Eduardo Camavinga, because he's kind of got that... In my opinion,
we both did the same thing. We were like, "Ooh,
it moves me. It moves me."
Because I remember doing an analysis on him before he went to Real Madrid of just that ability, where it's like you've, as a teenager, you've no right to command that confidence, that authority. And Camavinga's breakout game was a game against PSG where a lot of the PSG midfielders were like, you're not allowed to do that. You're a teenager. We're the dominant ones. And he was able to wriggle out of pressure. He was able to drive forward. He's able to have that incisive pass in him as well. And I see those kind of analogies as well, which to Carl's point, is probably not out of the ordinary in France, but obviously maybe a bit more of a rarity in England. So that one's purely by eye. Subjective, you can argue against it, whatever you want to do. But yeah, that's my take.
I guess, Carl, from a United perspective, due to these qualities, very unique, as you've said, England don't produce players like this. And also Manchester United are looking for that dynamism in midfield. Is there a danger that United become overly reliant on an 18-year-old young lad who's still trying to find his feet as a professional footballer?
That's a really good question. At this point in time, and as we're recording, I don't know the injury status of Casemiro. Mason Mount played 15 minutes just after coming back from a calf injury. So Maynard is not just one of the best suited midfielders in those deep areas. He's also the most match fit as well. United are going to play Brentford on Saturday, and I'm going to assume Maynard will be in that starting lineup. And Ten Hag's been really careful with him so far this season. He took him off on New Year's Eve in a defeat against Nottingham Forest in a substitution choice that quite a few United fans were really angry about. Those, like, why aren't you've just voided midfield by taking him off? And Ten Hag said, well, I have to preserve him. He is 18 years of age. He can't play three games a week for 90 minutes at this point in time. So Ten Hag has this in the back of his mind. Unfortunately, what's going on with Casemiro and other players mean Maynard will likely play at least 70 minutes. It's one game a week for United at this point in time, but he will at least play 70 minutes between now and the end of the season, knock on wood, barring injury. Next season, I think things will change. The difficult thing now is to forecast where Mount fits in, because I'm not quite sure Maynard as the deepest midfielder and Mount ahead of him fit. But there could be a scenario where Casemiro or another defensive midfield, could be Amrabat at Manchester United, and Maynard and Mount can rotate minutes together. And that way you keep Maynard from burning out and you preserve Mount. Of course, there's the other alternative that I'm sure quite a lot of Manchester United fans would want, is that Maynard play terribly against Belgium, didn't go to the Euros, and he gets to be nice and fresh for the next season. But sorry, toothpaste out the tube, cat's out the bag, he's on the plane.
Gents, thanks so much for your time. And don't forget to rate and review the podcast. We're back tomorrow. Speak soon.
The Athletic.